Unit 11, Shah Jahan, Wars, Accomplishments in Art and Architecture. Page 75. Structure 11.0, Objectives 11.1, Introduction 11.2, Early Life 11.3, Accession 11.4, Rebellions 11.4.1, The Bundela Rebellion 11.4.2, Khan Jahan's Lodi Rebellion 11.5, Famine and Plague 11.6, War with Portuguese 1631-32 11.7, Death of Mumtaz Mahal 1631 AD 11.8, Deccan Policy of Shah Jahan 11.8.1, War against Ahmednagar 11.8.2, War against Bijapur 11.8.3, Subjugation of Golconda 11.9, North-West Frontier Policy 11.10, Central Asian Policy 11.11, War of Succession 11.11.1, Battle of Dharmat 11.11.2, Battle of Samurgarh 11.11.3, Occupation of Agra by Aurangzeb with the imprisonment of Shah Jahan. Page 76. 11.11.4, Elimination of his brothers. 11.12, Golden Age. 11.12.1, Peace and Prosperity. 11.12.2, Development of Education and Literature. 11.12.3, Development of Art and Architecture. 11.13, An Estimate. 11.14, Let Us Sum Up. 11.15, Questions for Self-Study. 11.16, Books for Further Study. Page 77. 11.0, Objectives. By studying this unit, you are going to learn about the early life of Shah Jahan and his accession to the throne, the rebellions he suppressed, the outbreak of famine and the epidemics, and the relief measures undertaken by Shah Jahan. Deccan Policy of Shah Jahan and how he succeeded in annexing Ahmednagar to the Mughal Empire, and how he made Bijapur and Golconda to accept Mughal paramountcy. The unsuccessful attempts made to conquer Kandahar. Attempts to conquer homeland in Central Asia and the reasons for failure. The War of Succession among the four sons of Shah Jahan. The success of Aurangzeb in the War of Succession and the imprisonment of Shah Jahan. The factors accounted for Golden Age. Peace and prosperity in the Mughal Empire. Development of education and literature. Unique contributions of Shah Jahan to architecture. His place in the history of Mughals. 11.1. Introduction. The reign of Shah Jahan, which lasted for over 30 years, 1627 to 1658, was a period of peace and prosperity. In the history of the Mughals, the period of his rule has been described as the Golden Age. Shah Jahan tried to extend the frontiers of the Mughal Empire. Akbar and Jahangir had bequeathed to Shah Jahan a well-knit, prosperous and the best administered empire of Asia. He had no anxiety of any sort about the political or the administrative affairs. During his reign, there was hardly any disturbances. The revolts of his sons, that is, War of Succession, which occurred towards the close of his reign, really ended his reign. As a result of peace and prosperity that prevailed in the empire, Shah Jahan could spend lavishly on the construction of world-famous monuments. In the field of architecture, the greatest contribution was made by Shah Jahan. Therefore, the reign of Shah Jahan has been considered as the Golden Age in the history of the Mughals. Page 78. 11.2. Early Life. Shah Jahan was one of the four sons of Jahangir. He was born of the Rajput princess Jagat Gosain in 1592 at Lahore. He was born when his grandfather was still alive. He was named as Khurram. The prince was given a liberal education. His education was planned and supervised by Akbar. He learnt Persian and Turkish languages, history, geography, theology and medicine. Military training formed an important part of the prince's education. Even while young, it was believed that Jahangir intended to make him as his successor. It was on account of his bravery and sense of responsibility that he was put in charge of many expeditions by his father. In 1607, he was given the mansab of 8,000 zat and 5,000 sawar. In 1612, when he was 20 years of age, he married Arjunman Banu Begum or Mumtaz Mahal, the daughter of Asaf Khan. He was the brother of Nur Jahan. It was during this period that she was rising to preeminence. She tried to win over her side Khurram. She persuaded the emperor in 1617 to raise the prince's mansab to 30,000 zat and 20,000 sawar, as he had distinguished himself in the Mewar campaign against the Rajputs and Malik Amber in Deccan. Khurram was also given the title Shah Jahan, and a chair was allotted to him near the throne in the Darbar. However, there was a sudden fall in the fortunes of Prince Khurram after the marriage of Prince Shahryar with the daughter of Nur Jahan. Nur Jahan supported the claims of her son-in-law Shahryar. She wanted to make Shahryar as the successor of Jahangir. When Khurram learned of this secret design, he was asked to proceed to Kandahar. He refused to go. Thus, he revolted against the emperor in 1622. Khurram moved from place to place with his supporters, but finally he was suppressed. Khurram offered an apology to the emperor, which was readily accepted. 11.3 Accession. Jahangir's health was rapidly declining, and Nur Jahan knew that her supremacy would come to an end if she did not exclude Shah Jahan from the succession. She was not ready to make any compromise with Shah Jahan. After Jahangir's death in October 1627, she formed a definite plan to bring to throne Shahryar. While Asaf Khan pressed the claims of Shah Jahan, he successfully thwarted his sister's plan of making Shahryar as the ruler. Thus, both sister and brother supported their respective sons-in-law. Shah Jahan was not available as he was in the Deccan, and it would have taken some time to reach Agra. Therefore, Asaf Khan put Dawar Baksh, son of Khurram, on the throne as a stopgap arrangement. Page 79. Meanwhile, Asaf Khan gave Shahryar a battle near Lahore. The latter was defeated and taken prisoner and blinded. Shah Jahan arrived near Agra early in February 1628 and entered the city. He formally ascended the throne on 24th February 1628. The khutbah was read in his name and coins were struck in his name. Nur Jahan was given an adequate pension and allowed to spend the rest of her life peacefully in Lahore, where she built her husband's mausoleum, carried on the work of charity, and died in 1645. All coins bearing her name were immediately withdrawn. Thus began a new era in the history of the Mughals. 11.4 Rebellions. Many rebellions occurred during the reign of Shah Jahan. Rebellion of Bundela Rajputs and Khan Jahan Lodi rebellions are the most important. Shah Jahan crushed these rebellions. 11.4.1 The Bundela Rebellion. Jujhar Singh's father, Bir Singh Dev, was a great friend of Jahangir. Jujhar Singh arrived at Agra in April 1628 and presented to the emperor 1,000 rupees and one elephant. His reception was satisfactory. Afterwards, Shah Jahan ordered an inquiry into the unauthorized gains of his father. Jujhar Singh considered it highly improbable. Therefore, he raised the standard of revolt. He went to Orchha and started raising an army to fight against Shah Jahan. Mahabat Khan was ordered to put down the rebellion in Bundelkhad. Two more armies under other generals were sent in different directions to fight against the Bundela chief. Thus, Bundela was attacked on all sides. He could not withstand the attacks of the imperial army. Finally, Jujhar Singh submitted himself to the Mughal emperor. He was forgiven on condition of surrendering a part of his jagir. He agreed to proceed to the Deccan to fight on behalf of Mughals against the Deccan rulers. But Bundela chief again revolted against Shah Jahan. After returning from the Deccan, he decided to conquer Gondwana. He attacked Chunargarh in 1635 and killed its ruler. The son of Prem Narayana appealed to Shah Jahan for help, but Shah Jahan, instead of helping, he directed Jujhar Singh to surrender. Jujhar Singh refused to surrender. Therefore, he directed Aurangzeb to suppress the rebellion of Jujhar Singh. Aurangzeb defeated him in many battles. Finally, Jujhar Singh was killed. Vikramjit was also killed. Both Jujhar Singh's territory and Gondwana were annexed to the Mughal Empire. Orchha was given to a relative of Jujhar, but the people refused to accept him as their ruler because they considered him as a traitor as he had joined the side of the Mughals. Thus, the most flourishing branch of the Bundela dynasty, which was patronized by Jahangir, met a tragic fate at the hands of his son Shah Jahan. 11.4.2 Khan Jahan Lodi's Rebellion. Immediately after the accession of Shah Jahan, the peace of the empire was disturbed by the rebellion of Khan Jahan Lodi. Page 80. He was the governor of the Deccan. It is alleged that in the Deccan he accepted bribe from Nizam Shah and surrendered Balaghat to him. On Jahangir's death, he supported and allied himself with Nur Jahan. However, when Shah Jahan ascended the throne, Khan Jahan Lodi submitted himself to the emperor. Shah Jahan pardoned him and allowed him to retain the governorship of the Deccan. Khan Jahan Lodi was asked to recover Balaghat from Nizam Shah, but he could not recover. Therefore, Shah Jahan recalled Khan Jahan Lodi to his court and appointed Mahabad Khan as the governor of the Deccan. Even at the court, he did not attend to his duties regularly. Shah Jahan was upset by the behavior of Khan Jahan Lodi. Once again, he forgave him. In spite of this, Khan Jahan Lodi was not happy and decided to flee from the court. He ultimately succeeded in his plans. He fled to the south with his 5,000 troops. The imperial army pursued him. Shah Jahan dispatched 3 imperial forces to capture Khan Jahan Lodi. Although Khan Jahan Lodi was defeated by the imperialists in a number of skirmishes, the latter somehow escaped. Finally, he succeeded in taking shelter in the Ahmednagar kingdom. But the Mughal troops ravaged the whole Ahmednagar kingdom with the intention of capturing Khan Jahan Lodi. Therefore, Ahmednagar ruler expelled Khan Jahan Lodi from his kingdom along with his troops. Khan Jahan Lodi marched towards northwestern India with the intention of obtaining the help of the Afghans. Meanwhile, the Mughal troops chased him, and finally in a battle which was fought at Tal Sehonda near Kalinjar, he was killed. It was really a great relief to Shah Jahan. 11.5 Famine and Plague, 1630-32. During the Khan Jahan Lodi revolt, the provinces of Gujarat, Khandesh and many parts of the Deccan witnessed a terrible drought and famine in 1630-32. The foodstuffs became scarce. Many villagers left their houses in search of food and water. The famine was followed by the outbreak of plague. As a result, thousands of people died. Abdul Hamid Lahori and Peter Mundi, contemporary writers, gave an exhaustive account of the miserable conditions of the people. Peter Mundi, who was in Deccan in November 1630, describes the horrible conditions of the town witnessed by him. According to him, highways were strewn with corpses which emitted foul smell. Abdul Hamid Lahori gives an account of the relief measures taken by Shah Jahan during this period. On Shah Jahan's orders, the officials established langars at Bahranpur, Ahmedabad and other places to feed the poor and the destitute. Every day, sufficient soup and bread was prepared to satisfy the wants of hungry. Money was also distributed to the poor. 50,000 rupees were given in charity at Ahmedabad and 1 lakh at Bahranpur over a period of 4 or 5 months. The emperor was too generous to give tax remission to the peasants to a greater extent. The remission amounted to nearly 70 lakhs of rupees. The famine relief measures taken by Shah Jahan have been appreciated by almost all the historians. Page 81, 11.6, War with Portuguese, 1631-32. The Portuguese had established a settlement on the banks of the Hooghly River in Bengal since the beginning of the 16th century. During the time of the predecessors of Shah Jahan, the Portuguese were given certain privileges and trade carried on and commerce without any hindrance. By the time Shah Jahan ascended the throne, these Portuguese had become a powerful community and posed a threat to the Mughal Empire. They converted their privileges into rights and grew aggressive in their dealing with the local inhabitants. They tried to convert many people to Christianity. They often resorted to piracy and slave trade. After Shah Jahan's accession to the throne, Qasim Khan, the governor of Bengal, reported to the emperor about the activities of the Portuguese. They had fortified their settlements on the Hooghly. They started levying tolls on the Indian merchants' boats and defied the authority of the local Mughal officers. Shah Jahan was very angry about the illegal activities of the Portuguese. Therefore, he ordered Qasim Khan to teach a lesson to the Portuguese. But Qasim Khan's task was not so easy. His first attack was repulsed by the Portuguese. Again, Qasim Khan reorganized his troops and marched on the Portuguese settlement. The siege lasted about 3 months and a half. Both sides, thousands of soldiers died. Finally, Qasim Khan gained an upper hand and the power of the Portuguese was broken. Many were captured. About 10,000 Portuguese died. Another 4,400 persons, including men, women and children, and slave girls were captured. They were brought to Agra. Many were converted and others were put to death. Thus ended the Portuguese menace. 11.7. Death of Mumtaz Mahal, 1631 AD. Shah Jahan's beloved wife Arjumam Banu Begum, styled Mumtaz Mahal, died in 1631 AD. She was the daughter of Asaf Khan, the brother of Noor Jahan. Mumtaz Mahal died at Burhanpur on 7th June 1631. Mumtaz was buried at first in a garden at Burhanpur, but later on her remains were brought to Agra and buried on the bank of the river Yamuna, over which now stands the world famous Taj Mahal. 11.8. Deccan Policy of Shah Jahan. Shah Jahan's Deccan Policy was a continuation of the one started by his ancestors Akbar and Jahangir. The Mughals took a long time to subjugate the Deccan states Ahmednagar, Bijapur and Golconda. But Shah Jahan as a prince had fought many wars in the Deccan. He possessed a very good knowledge of these Deccan kingdoms. Therefore, immediately after his accession to the throne, he decided to pursue the Deccan policy of his predecessors. His desire to conquer all the Deccan kingdom and achieve the political unification of the country. Another factor which influenced Shah Jahan to conquer Deccan kingdom was religious. The rulers of Ahmednagar, Bijapur and Golconda were all Shias by faith. Shah Jahan was a follower of Sunni. Page 82. In order to understand the events of the reign of Shah Jahan, it is necessary to know in brief what had happened in the Deccan during his predecessor's period. Akbar had annexed Khandesh in 1599 and captured Asirgarh in 1601. He had also secured Berar, which was then a part of the Nizam Shahi dominion of Ahmednagar. Jahangir, in spite of his prolonged and elaborate campaigns in the Deccan, could not make any headway in the south. This was partly due to the quarrels among the Mughal generals on the one level and partly as a result of valiant effort of Malik of Amber. However, status quo was maintained as a result of the efforts of Khurram, that is Shah Jahan. Further, it must be pointed out that Deccan kingdoms always acted as shelters to many who revolted against the imperial authority. For example, Shah Jahan himself had sought during his revolt the shelter in the Deccan with the king of Golconda. At the commencement of the reign of Shah Jahan, Khan Jahan Lodi himself sought refuge in the Deccan. To prevent further repetitions of this nature and also to pursue his ancestor policy, he decided to conquer the Deccan kingdoms, Ahmednagar, Bijapur and Golconda. 11.8.1 War against Ahmednagar. With Shah Jahan's accession to the throne commenced a new era of Deccan policy. Fully aware of the strong and weak points of the Deccan states, he was qualified to undertake operations on a large scale. At the time of Shah Jahan's accession, Ahmednagar was ruled by Murtaza II, Nizam Shah. He had carried on the struggle against the Mughals with the able assistance of his ministers Malik Amber. On the eve of Shah Jahan's accession, the ruler of Ahmednagar had recovered the territories of Balaghat from the Mughals by bribing the Deccan viceroy of the Mughals, Khan Jahan Lodi. Afterwards, when Khan Jahan himself revolted against Shah Jahan, the Ahmednagar ruler gave him shelter. This irritated very much Shah Jahan. Therefore, Shah Jahan decided to teach a lesson to Murtaza II. Shah Jahan himself, in person, led an expedition to the Deccan in 1630. He stayed at Burhanpur for 2 years and directed the operations against Khan Jahan Lodi and also against Murtaza II, the Ahmednagar ruler. By this time, Malik Amber was succeeded by his son Fateh Khan as the Prime Minister. Malik Amber had died in 1626. Fateh Khan was not a shrewd diplomat like his father. Soon differences arose between the Ahmednagar ruler and Fateh Khan. The Sultan imprisoned Fateh Khan, but because of the interference of Fateh Khan's sister married to the Sultan, he was released and reappointed as Prime Minister. Even after this, the difference between the two continued. Fateh Khan got the king imprisoned. Finally, he was killed. Afterwards, he placed Nizam Shah's son, Hussein, a boy of 10, on the throne. The nobles did not like the treacherous activities of Fateh Khan and many turned against him. Actually, civil war occurred in Ahmednagar kingdom. This weakened the position of the kingdom. Meanwhile, Shah Jahan had placed Mahabakht Khan, in charge of the Mughal army of the Deccan. Mahabat Khan attacked the bases of Khan Jahan Lodi and also the territories of Ahmednagar ruler. The war continued. Meanwhile, famine and plague broke out. Page 83. At the same period, Mumtaz Mahal died. The emperor found it very difficult to overcome the sorrow. The emperor decided to leave the Deccan. However, Mahabat Khan forced Fateh Khan to conclude a treaty. Accordingly, Fateh Khan accepted Mughal supremacy. Afterwards, Shah Jahan returned to the capital. In the Ahmednagar kingdom, day by day, the situation worsened. There were two strong rival groups amongst the nobles. Shahaji Bhosle, father of Shivaji, was a leader of one of these factions. Soon, differences arose between Fateh Khan and Shahaji Bhosle. As a result, Shahaji threatened Fateh Khan to march on the stronghold of Daulatabad with the assistance of the armies of Bijapur. Fateh Khan was not in a position to defend himself. Therefore, he appealed to Mahabat Khan, Mughal viceroy, for help. Mahabat Khan cleverly laid a trap to annex the whole of Ahmednagar kingdom. He persuaded Fateh Khan to surrender the fort of Daulatabad with the boy Sultan in return for Mughal protection and a reward, that is bribe, of over 10 lakhs of rupees. Fateh Khan blindly accepted the conditions of Mahabat Khan. Meanwhile, the Mughal army led by Mahabat Khan himself reached Daulatabad before the arrival of Shahaji Bhosle. On June 17, 1633, Fateh Khan opened the gates of the fort and handed it over to the Mughals. The boy King Hussein Shah was taken captive and sent to Gwalior. Fateh Khan was admitted into the imperial service. Meanwhile, Shahaji Bhosle continued the struggle against Mughals by declaring a member of the Nizam Shahi family as the ruler. Meanwhile, Mahabat Khan, the Mughal viceroy of the Deccan, passed away in 1634. As a result, Shah Jahan himself came to the Deccan to continue the struggle against Shahaji Bhosle. He reached Burhanpur in 1636. Shah Jahan attracted to his side the supporters of Shahaji Bhosle either by offering bribe or by threat. Thus, many deserted Shahaji Bhosle. His position became very weak. He suffered a defeat at the hands of the Mughals. He surrendered the puppet Nizam Shah Murtaza II and six forts which he had held. However, Shahaji was permitted to enter the service under the Sultan of Adil Shah of Bijapur. Thus, the Mughals succeeded in occupying the whole of Ahmednagar kingdom. 11.8.2 War against Bijapur. Shah Jahan next proceeded against Adil Shah, the king of Bijapur, because he had refused to acknowledge his sovereignty of the Mughals. Further, Muhammad Adil Shah of Bijapur had supported always Ahmednagar kingdom against the Mughals. In 1631, Shah Jahan sent an army under Asaf Khan. However, he failed to reduce Bijapur to submission. Thus, the first military campaign against Bijapur proved a failure. Again in 1635, when Shahaji Bhosle tried to revive the state of Ahmednagar, Shah Jahan wrote to the rulers of Bijapur and Golconda not to assist Shahaji Bhosle and also acknowledge the Mughal suzerainty. The ruler of Golconda accepted Mughal suzerainty and agreed to pay tribute, but the Sultan of Bijapur refused to accept the suzerainty of the Mughals. Therefore, Shah Jahan launched an attack on Bijapur capital. Page 84. The Mughal soldiers ravaged the country. Muhammad Adil Shah found it very difficult to continue the struggle against the Mughals. Thus, he concluded a peace treaty in 1636 AD. Accordingly, he accepted the suzerainty of the Mughals and agreed to pay an annual tribute of rupees 20 lakhs. Shah Jahan returned voluntarily the forts of Parendra, Bidar, Gulbarga, Sholapur to Bijapur. Adil Shah also agreed not to give up any help or shelter to Shahji and not to create any problems to the kingdom of Golconda. The treaty signed in May 1636 remained in force till 1656. In 1656 AD, Muhammad Adil Shah died. His queen, Bari Sahiba, placed a boy of 18 years on the throne who assumed the title of Adil Shah II. Probably Muhammad Adil Shah I had no son. Therefore, the queen, for convenience, accepted the boy as her own. The matter was reported to the emperor by Aurangzeb, who was then the viceroy of the Deccan. Shah Jahan felt it was a fine opportunity to annex Bijapur to the Mughal Empire. Shah Jahan accused Bijapur that it had not paid the annual tribute in full and had illegally occupied the territory of Mir Jumla in Karnataka. He ordered Aurangzeb to attack Bijapur on these pretexts and sent Mir Jumla and a few other capable officers to help Aurangzeb in the campaign. Aurangzeb attacked Bijapur territories. Bidar was captured and Kalyani was also captured. Bijapur was not in a position to continue the war. It sued for peace. Shah Jahan ordered Aurangzeb to conclude a peace treaty in Bijapur. Bijapur agreed to a war indemnity of ₹1.5 crores. However, Shah Jahan reduced it to 1 crore. But the forts of Bidar and Kalyani remained under the control of Mughals only. Meanwhile, Shah Jahan fell ill. Adil Shah too took advantage of this and refused to fulfill the terms of the treaty. Aurangzeb also could collect only a part of war indemnity. 11.8.3 Subjugation of Golconda. In 1636 AD, when Mughals forced Bijapur and the Marathas for peace, pressure was put on Golconda also. In the same year, Abdullah Qutb Shah concluded a treaty with Mughals. Golconda acknowledged the overlordship of Shah Jahan. The name of Shah of Persia was excluded from the khutbah, which was now read in the name of the Mughal emperor. Golconda agreed to pay an annual tribute of 6 lakh of rupees with retrospective effect. Arrears of the tribute amounting to 32 lakhs of rupees were to be paid in installments. The Sultan also agreed to help the Mughals in case they were attacked by the Sultan of Bijapur or Marathas. Thus, the Deccan policy of the Mughals proved fairly successful during the reign of Shah Jahan. The existence of Ahmednagar was wiped out. Both Bijapur and Golconda accepted the suzerainty of the emperor. Both of them agreed to pay tribute annually. A few territories and a few forts belonged to both the kingdoms were occupied by the Mughals. Shah Jahan understood the politics of the Deccan. He calculated that the annexation of these states would create problems for the Mughal Empire. Therefore, he weakened them and made them to accept the Mughal suzerainty. Page 85. 11.9 Northwest Frontier Policy. Shah Jahan, while as prince, had refused to march on Kandahar when it was besieged by the Persians. Thus, Kandahar passed onto the hands of the Persians in 1622. Now, Shah Jahan showed eagerness to reconquer it from the Persians. He considered Kandahar to be a legitimate part of the Mughal Empire. During this period, Ali Mardan was the ruler of Kandahar. His relations with his master, the ruler of Persia, were strained. Shah Jahan wanted to make use of this situation. Therefore, he asked the Mughal governor at Kabul to establish secret contacts with Ali Mardan and persuade him to change his sides. There, the Mughal governor was Sayyid Khan. He offered to Ali Mardan and his nobles top military and civil positions in the Mughal government. On the receipt of Mughal offers, Ali Mardan sent a note of warning to his Persian master that he received threats from Kabul. The Persians failed to assess the situation correctly. The Persian ruler, instead of appreciating the difficulties of Ali Mardan, he suspected him and sent a military general to arrest him. Therefore, Ali Mardan was forced to seek shelter of the Mughals. Sayyid Khan, the Mughal governor of Kabul, dispatched a contingent of 1,000 troops under Iwaz Khan in February 1638 to Kandahar. He himself carefully watched the developments. Ali Mardan allowed Mughal troops to enter into Kandahar fort. He handed over the control of the fort to the commander of the Mughal army. He read the khutbah in the name of Shah Jahan on February 28, 1638. Pro-Persian groups were expelled from Kandahar. Meanwhile, Sayyid Khan also came to Kandahar. He finally succeeded in conquering the whole of Kandahar region. Shah Jahan was very happy to hear this news. Ali Mardan and his followers were richly awarded. Ali Mardan was paid 1 lakh of rupees as a reward for his treachery against Persian monarch and was granted a high mansab. Later on, he served as governor of Kashmir and then that of Punjab. However, the Mughals failed to retain their authority and supremacy over Kandahar for a long time, and at last Shah Abbas II established his control over Kandahar in 1648 AD. Shah Jahan was very much disappointed by the loss of Kandahar again. He made 3 unsuccessful attempts to recover this province again. In 1649 AD, he sent a powerful army under the command of Aurangzeb and Prime Minister Sadullah Khan, but they could not achieve success against the Persians. Thus, the first attempt failed. Of course, Shah Jahan was not disheartened by this failure. He sent a second expedition in 1652 under the leadership of his son Aurangzeb. He had made elaborate preparations. He laid siege to Kandahar fort. Even after a prolonged siege, he was not successful in conquering Kandahar. Shahjahan had realized the futility of the siege of Kandahar, so he ordered Aurangzeb to end the siege and come back to the capital. Dr. Beni Prasad writes about the feelings of Shahjahan as a result of this debacle. Shahjahan in his lifetime could never forget the disgrace which his army suffered in Kandahar. Page 86. Shahjahan could not forget this defeat and it haunted his mind. Again, after vast preparations, he appointed Dara Shikoh in place of Aurangzeb as commander of the expedition. Dara Shikoh marched against Kandahar in 1653 AD. Before laying siege to Kandahar, he devastated surrounding regions. No doubt he succeeded in these raids, but he could not conquer Kandahar. Thus, Dara Shikoh's expedition also failed. These successive defeats forced Shahjahan to give up the idea of victory over Kandahar in future. These series of defeats at the hands of the Persians proclaimed to the world about the military weaknesses of the Mughals. 10.10. Central Asian Policy. Mughals wanted to establish their rule over Central Asia and acquire control over their homeland. All the emperors before Shahjahan made many attempts to establish their control over Samarkand, Badakhshan and Bukhara, but they could not succeed in their mission due to the powerful opposition of the Uzbeks. Shahjahan, on the advice of some flatterers and short-sighted courtiers, developed a craze to conquer the homeland. An opportunity was offered to Shahjahan to launch the Central Asian campaign in 1646. There was a dispute in the royal family of Balkh and Shahjahan thought of fishing in troubled waters. Abdul Aziz, the son of Nazar Muhammad Khan, the ruler of Bukhara, revolted against his father. Nazar Muhammad was defeated by his son and took shelter in Balkh. To his misfortune, he asked for help from Shahjahan. The latter immediately dispatched an army under the command of Prince Murad and Ali Mardan for Balkh. Of late, Nazar Muhammad realized the mistake of the help he sought from the Mughals. Immediately he made peace with his son. Thus he was permitted by his son to retain Balkh and Badakhshan. Meanwhile, the Mughal army plundered Balkh and Badakhshan regions. Nazar Muhammad fled from Balkh. Murad could not bear the climate of Bar and sought his father's permission to return to India. Without waiting for Shahjahan's reply, he returned to Kabul. Shahjahan was very angry. Then he sent Sadullah Khan, the prime minister of the empire, to Balkh. He stayed at Balkh for some time, made some administrative arrangements and then returned to the court. Then Aurangzeb was sent in 1647. Shahjahan himself stayed in Kabul to supervise the arrangements made at Balkh. But the tribesmen of Hindu Kush and Uzbeks were not happy with the intrusion of Mughals into Central Asia. They blocked the passage of the Mughal reinforcements, which was sent to Balkh and put them to great inconvenience. In spite of this, Aurangzeb managed to reach Balkh and continued the war against Uzbeks. Finally, he defeated them on September 23, 1647. Nazar Muhammad agreed to accept Mughal suzerainty. In spite of this success, at last the Mughals realized that it was impossible to live at Balkh, which was surrounded by hostile population. Therefore, after taking the approval of Shahjahan, Aurangzeb handed over the charge of Balkh, in fact, to Nazar Muhammad and returned to Kabul. Page 87. Nazar Muhammad remained loyal to Shahjahan until his abdication in favor of his son in 1650. But the Mughals got nothing in the form of tribute from Nazar Muhammad. Thus, the Central Asian expedition was a futile exercise conducted by Shahjahan. It was a serious setback to the Mughal prestige and had its ruinous effects on the Mughal Empire in the long run. 11.11. War of Succession. Shahjahan was suddenly taken ill on 8 September 1657. He failed to attend the court for a long time and could not appear at the Jarokha Darshan. The rumor spread that he was dead. Shahjahan, after his recovery, in order to avoid war of succession, declared Prince Dara Shikoh as his successor. But among the Mughals, the succession was decided by the sword. Shahjahan had 4 sons. All of them were born of the same mother. By this time, they were mature and grown up. In 1657, Dara was 43, Shah Shuja 41, Aurangzeb 39 and Murad 33. The eldest son, Dara Shikoh, was an educated, cultured and liberal prince. He was kind and loyal to his father. He was a prince of liberal religious views. Therefore, he commanded respect among Hindus. He was appointed as governor of Punjab, but always remained at the court assisting his father. Though he was brave, he did not possess the qualities of a statesman. In the art of war and diplomacy, he did not excel Aurangzeb. Shah Shuja was the governor of Bengal. He was a victim of pleasures and luxury. He was a follower of Shia faith, and as a result, he was hated by Sunni Muslims who formed overwhelming majority in the empire. The next important prince was Aurangzeb. He was the ablest of all sons of Shah Jahan. He was a great soldier and a general. He himself led many expeditions. He possessed a lot of administrative experience as the governor of the Deccan and Gujarat. He was a fanatic Sunni by faith, and therefore the Sunnis were desirous to have him as the emperor. Murad was the youngest son of Shah Jahan, but he was dissolute and drunken. He was liberal and kind-hearted, but he lacked shrewdness. He was the governor of Gujarat at this time. All these four princes prepared themselves to capture the throne when Shah Jahan fell ill. First of all, Shuja declared himself an independent ruler of Hindustan in Bengal and advanced towards Delhi from Bengal. Hearing the news of Shuja's advancement towards Agra, Dara sent an army against him under the leadership of Suleiman Shikoh and Raja Jai Singh. In 1658, both the armies met at a place called Bahadurpur. A battle was fought. Finally, Shuja was defeated and he retreated. Page 88. Murad, the governor of Gujarat, also declared himself as the ruler. He got the coins struck in his name and khutba was read in his name. Aurangzeb was very shrewd. He consolidated his position in the Deccan. He collected a lot of wealth. He also won the favor of Mir Jumla and established his control over his artillery and treasury. He entrusted the responsibility of the governorship of Deccan to his son Muazzam. Then he watched carefully the movements of his brothers. He struck a deal with Murad to partition the empire between themselves. Accordingly, Murad was to get one-third of the booty and sovereignty over the northwestern part of the Mughal Empire, including the Punjab, Sindh, Kashmir and Kabul, while Aurangzeb was to acquire the throne of Agra. Murad foolishly believed the words of Aurangzeb. 11.11.1 Battle of Dharmat. Aurangzeb marched from the Deccan and Murad from Gujarat. The armies met at Ujjain in April 1658. Meanwhile, Dara Shikoh dispatched an army under the command of Kasim Khan and Raja Jaswant Singh of Jodhpur to deal with Murad. They were completely ignorant of Aurangzeb's movement. When they saw the combined armies at Ujjain, they were disheartened. Kasim Khan and his men wavered, but Raja Jaswant Singh launched a fierce attack on the armies of Aurangzeb and Murad. A fierce battle was fought at Dharmat on 25th April 1658. The imperial army was defeated. Jaswant Singh was wounded and forcibly removed from the field by his soldiers. Afterwards, the imperial army dispersed. 11.11.2 Battle of Samurgarh. The victorious armies of Murad and Aurangzeb swiftly advanced towards Agra. Dara decided to wage a war against his brothers. He organized a vast army and proceeded to fight against his brothers. Both the armies fought a battle at a place called Samurgarh, 8 miles east of Agra. Dara was badly defeated and he left for Delhi with his members. 11.11.3 Occupation of Agra by Aurangzeb and the imprisonment of Shah Jahan. Victorious armies, both Murad and Aurangzeb, marched towards Agra. Shah Jahan tried to win the favor of his son Aurangzeb but failed. Aurangzeb besieged the fort and forced Shah Jahan to open the gates. He entered the fort of Agra on 8th June 1658. He imprisoned his old father Shah Jahan, who passed the last 8 years of his life in imprisonment and died on 22nd January 1666. 11.4.4 Elimination of his brothers by Aurangzeb. But the victory of Samurgarh did not make Aurangzeb the emperor of India. All his brothers were still alive and they could pose a problem to him. Page 89. First of all, he wanted to get rid of Murad, who had supported him. Aurangzeb, knowing his habits, invited him to a party. After consuming a lot of wine, he became senseless. Aurangzeb arrested him and imprisoned him in the fort of Gwalior. In 1661, he was put to death. After the defeat at Samurgarh, Dara Shikoh fled to Delhi and took shelter there. But Dara soon realized that his position was not safe there also. Therefore, along with his family members, he moved towards Punjab. But Aurangzeb's troops chased him from place to place. At Devani, he was defeated and captured and brought to Delhi and was put to death. Aurangzeb, at the time of his accession, had appointed Shuja as the Subedar of Bihar. But Shuja knew the evil designs of his brother. Therefore, he decided to capture Agra and free his father. But in this venture, he was not successful. He was easily defeated by the troops of Aurangzeb. He fled towards Arakan. Finally, he was captured and put to death in 1666 AD. Thus, Aurangzeb got rid of his brothers very cleverly and occupied the throne. 11.12 Golden Age. Shahjahan's court represented the height of kingly splendor. In his reign of 30 years, the Mughal Empire witnessed the zenith of its prosperity and affluence. The fame of the wealth of India attracted a stream of foreign visitors from across the seas. These visitors were dazzled by the magnificent grandeur of the emperor and his surroundings. Besides, Tarvernir and Manuki have left charming accounts of their impressions and wonders of the Mughal court. 11.12.1 Peace and Prosperity. Under Jahangir, both finance and general administration had deteriorated. Shahjahan restored the stability and efficiency. Under his care, state revenue increased in spite of the disastrous famine of 1630, owing to better supervision over officials and greater security of life. Thus, uninterrupted peace, freedom from foreign invasions and good government enriched the state treasury and material well-being for the people. His period of rule is frequently referred to as the Golden Age of Mughal India or medieval Indian history. This is not an exaggeration. It is proved by the developments which took place during the reign of Shahjahan. Foreign travelers testify to the prevalence of perfect law and order in the empire during the days of Shahjahan. The roads were safe and movement of the traffic and trade was brisk and dacoits and thieves were punished severely. Tavernier, who had repeatedly visited many parts of the country, observes that Shahjahan reigned not so much as a king over his subjects, but rather as a father over his family and children. Further, he speaks in glowing terms of the security that people enjoyed during the reign of Shahjahan. Page 90. There was threat of foreign invasions. Shahjahan established efficiency governments. These factors assured an era of prosperity in the Mughal Empire. More land praises the excellent financial administration of Shahjahan. 11.12.2 Development of Education and Literature. Shahjahan was not merely interested in showing his magnificent life at the court. It was only one phase of his life. The other side was the development and dissemination of culture among the people. The prevailing peace in the country, together with the personal interest of the sovereign, gave a powerful impetus to the growth of art and literature. Poets, philosophers, scholars, artisans all flocked to court in search of patronage. The educational instructions established during the reign of Akbar flourished and their number increased manifold because of the liberal financial aid from the court. The liberal educational policy adopted by Akbar remained in full force till the end of Shahjahan's reign. Besides the court, there were also some other institutions for the spread of knowledge and culture among the people. There were two great schools, one at Agra and another at Delhi. Here, the teachers were directly appointed by the emperor. Private institutions provided education to the children. Kashmir was also an important center during this period. The natural result of this universal system of education was the quickening of literary activity. During the reign of Akbar, the development of Persian, Arabic and Sanskrit languages and literature took place. The same momentum continued during the reigns of Jahangir and Shahjahan. Persian, being the court language, received great encouragement and an enormous mass of literature was produced in it. It has to be clearly stated by this time, two distinct school of writers had come into existence. They were the Indo-Persian school and the Persian school. The most important scholar of the Indo-Persian school was Abul Fazl. This school absorbed Indian ideas and Indian thoughts. This school mostly concentrated on Indian subjects. The Persian school was favored by officers who were either of Persian origin or who traced their descent from Persian stock. During this period, a large number of Persian scholars came to the Mughal court. No Indian poet after Faizi held the post of poet laureate at the Mughal court. By this time, the Indo-Persian style had been standardized, but in poetry, pure Persian style was still predominant. Saidi Gilani was the oldest poet of purely Persian school living at the court of Shahjahan. Since the reign of Jahangir, he held the post of Daroga-e-Zargarkhana or held of the Department of Jewelry. Abul Talib Kalim was the poet laureate of Shah Jahan's court. Abdul Hamid Lahori wrote Padshahnama and Amin Kazwani wrote Shah Jahannama. Dara Sukho, the eldest son of Shah Jahan, was also a scholar of Arabic, Persian and Sanskrit. Page 91. The other notable poets who flourished in the courts of Shah Jahan were Kalim, Qadri Saib, Salim, Masih, Rafi, Farooq, Munir, Shaida, Chandrabhan, Hasik, Khiali, Dilini, Mahir and many others. As has been mentioned already, in prose also excellent works were produced during this period. Many scholars devoted their time for the compilation of historical works. Many correspondences, both official and private, have come down to us. These correspondences speak of their elegant and ornate style. The letters of Munir, Jai Singh, Afzal Khan, Sadul Khan are considered the best worded letters. For many scholars, they still serve as models. Shah Jahan's reign also witnessed the production of dictionaries. 4 comprehensive dictionaries were compiled and dedicated to Shah Jahan. Another development in the field of literature was the translation work. Dara Sikho took a lot of interest in the translation of many works from Sanskrit to Persian language. Munshi Banarsi Das translated Prabodh Chandrodaya and Ibn Har Kiran translated Ramayana into Persian. Dara Sikho translated the technical terms of Hindu pantheism and Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. Abdul Rashid rendered Bijganit from Sanskrit into Persian. Many works on religion were also produced during this period. Dara Sikho wrote a book called Safinai al-Awliya on Muslim saints. Fani wrote Dabistan al-Mazahib. It is a work on comparative religions. The disciplines of astronomy, mathematics, general science, also many works were produced. Mulla Farid, the greatest astrologer of the period, prepared the astral chart entitled Zis-il-Shahjahani. While Awatullah wrote a treatise on arithmetic, algebra and mensuration and dedicated it to Shah Jahan and Dara. Sahir-e-Sadiq is an encyclopedia which covers various subjects such as science, religion, philosophy, politics, ethics and so many other subjects. The 17th century is particularly famous for the growth and development of Hindi language and literature. The Emperor Shah Jahan himself spoke Hindi. He was fond of Hindi music and patronized Hindi poets. A number of Hindi scholars and poets including Sundar Das, Chintamani and Kavindra Acharya enjoyed the state patronage. Jagannath, the celebrated musician of Shah Jahan's reign, was also born a poet in Hindi. He was honored by the emperor with the title of Mahakavi Rai. 11.12.3 Development of Art and Literature. Shah Jahan's reign was without any doubt the golden age of medieval India from the point of view of the development of art and architecture. Shah Jahan patronized all fine arts. He maintained the tradition of Jahangir in the field of painting. He was a singer himself and enjoyed music. He patronized many musicians. Page 92. However, architecture made tremendous progress during the reign of Shah Jahan. The development of architecture reached its zenith. The buildings constructed in his reign stand as living monuments of unsurpassed skill. Shah Jahan was a builder par excellence. The buildings have maintained their claim and freshness in their vigor. They breathe sublimity, peace, elegance and grandeur. Shah Jahan had an inborn taste for architecture. Even in his early days as youth, was very selective in the matter of his residential accommodation. He suitably altered and renovated his apartments according to his taste. After coming to power, he displayed his passion for architectural activity without restraint. B. P. Saxena remarks that the two natural traits of Shah Jahan's character, that is, verity and ambition, were primarily responsible for his architectural activity. Another factor which encouraged Shah Jahan to take up architectural activity was the immense vigor he possessed. Shah Jahan erected all sorts of buildings in all parts of his empire. Every place which Shah Jahan visited during his reign bears a monument of his insatiable architectural interest. It is not possible to give even a list of all such buildings. Shah Jahan did not like the massive buildings erected by Akbar in red sand stone at Agra, Lahore and elsewhere. He showed interest in constructing buildings by using white marble, which was available in abundance from the quarries of Makrana near Sambhar. It is also stated that in few places, Shahjahan pulled down the buildings of Akbar and erected new ones by using marble stones. Agra. It was at Agra and Delhi the best buildings were constructed. The fort of Agra is a conglomeration of buildings of various types ranging from the time of Akbar to that of Shahjahan. The foundation of the famous fort of Agra was laid by Akbar. Earlier at this place, the brick fort of Sikandar Lodi existed. This fort was completed by Akbar in 8 years. He is said to have raised as many as 500 buildings of various types within the fort. Shahjahan made a substantial contribution by raising many structures. Diwan-e-Aam, Diwan-e-Khas, Mausumam Burj, Moti Masjid, Sheesh Mahal, Khas Mahal, Machhi Mahal and other buildings were constructed. The Mausumam Burj is actually a beautiful building made of marble. It faces the riverside of the fort and was originally decorated with precious stones. It was here that Shahjahan spent the last days of his life in captivity. The Moti Masjid is by far the most beautiful of all buildings in the fort. It is also called as Pearl Mosque. It was built in 7 years, 1645 to 53, at a cost of 3 lakh rupees. It is situated on elevated terrace in the courtyard of the north of the Diwan-e-Aam and measures 187 by 234 feet. It is an instance of supreme perfection of art combined with simplicity. The material used is white marble. Outside the fort on the northwest stands the Jami Masjid, built by Jahanara Begum, the eldest daughter of Shah Jahan. It was completed after 5 years of work in 1648. It is a fine structure of bold designs, excellent finish and magnificent proportion. It was built for public use. Page 93. Delhi. Shahjahan developed fascination towards Delhi. He did not like Agra to be his imperial residence. He decided to shift his court and harem there. At the same time, he did not want to occupy old buildings there. He decided to construct altogether a new imperial township in Delhi. According to Inayat Khan, the emperor's desire was to select on the banks of Jamuna some pleasant site for this purpose. Shahjahan visited Delhi and carried out an extensive survey of the landscape in its neighborhood along the banks of Jamuna for a long time. Finally, he selected a site popularly called as Salimgarh. The architects and astrologers also approved of the site on May 12, 1639. Foundation for the town was laid. The township was named as Shahjahanabad. It is now located by the famous Red Fort and Jama Masjid in the vicinity of Chandni Chowk. According to Inayat Khan, throughout the imperial dominions, wherever artificers could be found, whether plain stone cutters, ornamental sculptors, masons or carpenters, they were collected together and multitude of common laborers were employed in the work. This palace fort was completed in 9 years and 3 months. According to B.P. Saxena, the Red Fort of Delhi is one harmonious structure built at one time and on one uniform plan. In beauty and magnificence, it is unique in the East and perhaps unsurpassed in the world. It stands in marked contrast to Akbar's palace at Fatehpur Sukri. The one in the is the model of masculine vigor and the other of feminine over elaboration, but both have charms of their own. The Delhi Palace, that is Red Fort, is the only one in India which enables us to understand what the arrangements of a complete palace were. Inside the Red Fort, there are many buildings. The important buildings were the Diwan-e-Khas, Diwan-e-Aam, Rang Mahal, every one of which had its own ornamental garden with flower beds, water channels and fountains. Apart from imperial buildings, within the Red Fort, accommodation was provided to royal guards, storehouses, recreation house, kitchens and stables for horses and elephants. The Diwan-e-Khas adorned the Takht-e-Taz, the peacock throne, as one of the most richly ornamented buildings of Shahjahan, which aimed at depicting his grandeur at its height. The following couplet of Amir Khusro, inscribed on one of its walls, runs as follows. Agar firdaus rui zameenast, hameenast o, hameenast o, hameenast. Meaning, if there is paradise on earth, it is this, none but this. Page 94. The greatest marvel of Shahjahan's court was the famous peacock throne. Upon his accession, he issued orders for its construction and it was completed in 7 years. Its exquisite workmanship has been fully described by Tavernier. Next to it came the celebrated diamond known as Kohinoor, which was presented to the emperor by Mir Jumla. Monuments at other places. There are some of the important buildings constructed at different places. The mausoleum of Jahangir stands on the bank of the Ravi at Shahadra near Lahore. The tomb of Nizamuddin Aulia at Delhi is known for its beauty. Shah Jahan recast in marble the dome of the shrine of Sheikh Mohinuddin Chishti at Ajmer and constructed Jama Masjid near it. He constructed a huge and magnificent bathing ghat along the banks of the Ansagar Lake in Ajmer, which contains 5 baradaris, that is 12 doored mansions, of white marble for the use by the royal ladies. He constructed Diwan-e-Am, Shah Burj, Sheesh Mahal, Nalakha Mahal, Khwabgah in the fort of Lahore. He constructed many buildings in Kabul, Ajmer, Kandahar, Kashmir, Ahmedabad and other places as well. Taj Mahal. But the crowning beauty is the Taj, perhaps one of the most beautiful buildings in the world. It is regarded as one of the 7 wonders of the world. It constitutes one of the finest specimens of cultural heritage to the mankind. Havel calls it India's Venus de Milo. Taj Mahal was built by Shah Jahan in the memory of his beloved Queen Arjumam Banu Begum or Mumtaz Mahal, who died in 1631. Hitherto it was believed Taj Mahal was planned by Italian or some other European architects. But this view has been rejected and now it is universally accepted that the Taj is purely a work of Indian architects, artisans and craftsmen. It was not influenced by any European style. It is built according to Indian traditions. Its chief designer was Ustad Ahmad Lahori. It was constructed under his supervision. The author of Diwan-e-Afridi makes mention of a few architects and craftsmen who were involved in the construction of the Taj Mahal. According to Percy Brown, the structural work of the buildings seemed to have been principally in the hands of Mohammedans. The decoration was mainly the work of Hindu craftsmen. The difficult task of preparing the pietra dura, especially being entrusted to a group of the latter from Kannauj. It is said that apart from milk white marble, about 20 varieties of precious stones were procured from various parts of India and elsewhere, including Ceylon, Kandahar, Yemen, Ghorband and Persia to build the Taj Mahal. It took 22 years to complete construction of Taj Mahal. The cost was 3 crores of rupees. The main building platform, a little over 22 feet in height from the garden level and is 313 feet square. Its central dome is nearly 187 feet high. There is a minaret at each corner of the platform. The entire facade is richly ornamented by inscriptions of Quranic text in black letters on white surface within rectangular bands and flowers, Arabic skews and other patterns in precious inlay. Page 95. The mausoleum of Mumtaz Mahal with its garden and building complex is in the form of a rectangle measuring 1900 by 1000 feet. B.P. Saxena gives a glowing account of the architecture of Shah Jahan. He states, "The buildings constructed in Shah Jahan's reign stand as a living monument of unsurpassed engineering skill. They have maintained their charm and greatness in its full vigor and sumptuously feast the eyes of visitors from all corners of the world. They breathe sublimity, peace, elegance and grandeur." 11.13. An estimate. Shah Jahan was also another great ruler of the Mughal dynasty. He was a brave soldier and a general. During the time of Jahangir, he took part in many battles and many victories. After his accession to the throne, he proved himself to be an able ruler. He continued the expansionist policy of the Mughals. In Deccan, he was successful in bringing under his control many kingdoms. Shah Jahan tried to perfect the system of administration laid down by Akbar. He systematized the Mansabdari system. Shah Jahan has been praised for his financial administration. He succeeded in establishing peace and order in the society. Almost all foreign travelers who visited the Mughal Empire have described about peace and prosperity of the empire during the reign of Shah Jahan. Shah Jahan's greatest contribution is in the field of architecture. His reign has been described as a golden age in the field of architecture because of the best monuments constructed by him. Elphinstone describes Shah Jahan's age as the most prosperous ever known in India. Together with a large share of good government, that often falls to the lot of Asiatic nations. 11.14. Let us sum up. Shah Jahan ascended the Mughal throne in 1627 AD. After his accession, a few rebellions broke out and he successfully crushed them. During the early part of his reign, famine and plague also broke out, 1630-32. He took many measures to save the lives of the people. In Bengal, the Portuguese were posing serious problem. He crushed them and expelled from there. He continued his predecessor's policy in the Deccan. He successfully brought under his control Ahmednagar, Bijapur and Golconda. On the northwestern frontier of his empire, he made many attempts to reconquer Kandahar from the hands of the Persians. In the beginning, he was successful, but finally again, he lost control over it. He also sent many expeditions to reconquer his ancestors' homeland. These expeditions also finally turned out to be futile exercises. Towards the closing years of his reign, war of succession broke out among his sons. He nominated Dara Sukho as his successor. In spite of this, war continued and finally Aurangzeb emerged victorious. Shah Jahan was imprisoned and he spent his last years in prison. The 30-year rule of Shah Jahan witnessed the zenith of his prosperity and affluence. Shah Jahan's unique contributions to the development of architecture are marvelous. World-famous monuments were constructed during his reign. Therefore, his reign in the history of Mughals has been described as the Golden Age. Page 96. 11.15. Questions for self-assessment. 1. Give an account of military achievements of Shah Jahan. 2. Critically examine the Deccan policy of Shah Jahan. 3. Why the reign of Shah Jahan has been described as the Golden Age in the history of the Mughals. Explain. 11.16. Books for further study. 1. Ishwari Prasad, A Short History in the Muslim Rule of India. 2. J. L. Mehta, Advanced Study in the History of Medieval India. 3. Sri Vatsava A. L., The Mughal Empire. 4. Saxena B. P., History of Shah Jahan of Delhi. 5. L. P. Sharma, History of Medieval India. And 6. Satish Chandra, Medieval India from Sultanate to the Mughals. This unit has been written by Professor Shivanna. With that, we come to the end of Unit 11.